The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Wednesday, and it is March 22nd, last week of March, and as I talked about a little earlier in the program, Alabama player, freshman player, making really bad choices. But I don't know. I'm not making any sort of guarantee or breaking news. I'm saying, in my opinion, when a lot of these details have now been aired out, and you've seen the response of Nick Saban to say, "Yeah, I don't even care what this means to the number one team in America. I'm gonna say this anyway." I'm talking about the basketball team. There is no wrong place, wrong time, and well, he's right. There was nothing in the least accidental about what happened with Tony Mitchell. Now, and he's been suspended, and so it'll work out however it works out. He had a bunch of weed and a gun and was going 141. And also was trying to get away. So it wasn't he was going 141, saw the blue lights. Oh, my gosh, busted. So talked about that, and then Dan brought up that Cam Newton had, and I'm a big Cam fan, and always have been a big Cam fan. And when he was on his game, even in the NFL as well, he had a stretch in the Super Bowl season with Carolina where he had a stretch, I don't know, it was like 4 out of 5 weeks, 5 out of 6. He scored 5 touchdowns a week. Like accounting for 5 touchdowns in an NFL game is almost impossible. He did it multiple times as Carolina hit the stretch that year. I think his pro career, there was a play in the Super Bowl, if you remember, against Denver. The game was still being decided. And Denver, they dialed it up, man, defensively that day. It was just fantastic. I'm going to say this was, what, the first week of February 2016, I think? And so that's what I'm going to say this was. So that was the Super Bowl, and there was a play in that Super Bowl where it was still competitive, still being decided, and there was a fumble. And Cam didn't just dive in there and try to recover it. And right, wrong, good, bad, dead, buried, somewhere in the middle. That sort of from that exact moment, what I always looked at Cam, I saw a big giant smile, a big giant guy, a big giant quarterback, and a lot of touchdowns and yards, and always liked him. That was not the response from the overwhelming majority of folks. And basically, it's anybody who, you know, Cam, he didn't play for your team, you didn't like him. Then Cam, you know, when people started paying a lot more attention to him, he would just do goofy things sometimes. And sometimes it would be, "Why are you wearing that hat? Or why are you, that jacket, is there a mirror in your house?" So sometimes it's just goofy stuff, but you can dress any way you want to dress. I never cared about that. You can wear your hair any way you want to wear your hair. Most of the time, Cam's worst offenses were, he was just kind of goofy. And so, guilty, guilty, guilty. Do you know who else his worst offenses are? He's just kind of goofy. Worst offenses. LeBron James. What is LeBron more than anything? He's kind of goofy and geeky and nerdy and whatever. He's not cool. He just is what I don't know. He's 6'8 and looks like that. And he's been playing in the NBA for 20 years and he's one of the 5 best players ever, or 3 maybe. So, but LeBron, if you think about it, LeBron isn't, quote, cool. Tom Brady's not cool. There are some folks you look at and go, "Yeah, that guy's cool." And I certainly wouldn't say that about him. And so Cam, cool? No. He was kind of dorky. And when you're an MVP and starting quarterback in the NFL and Heisman Trophy winner and won a national championship and first overall pick and all these other things, then you get to be as goofy as you want to be. And it doesn't matter what I think. But there's no way you can sometimes look at his mode of transportation, the way he would comport himself, what he would pull out of the closet, my gosh, what he would buy in the first place to put in the closet. There's no way you could look at him and go, he's kind of goofy sometimes. There's no way you could deny that. But here's my point. Like LeBron's just kind of goofy sometimes and silly and worries about Twitter and then also was out there beating the drum for social justice and a lot of other really more important things. But that's kind of as far as that goes with him. Like, I don't know, who's George Clooney? Cool. Snoop Dogg? Cool. If you can sell marijuana and hand towels with Martha, you're probably crossing a lot of spectrums there, I think. Cam didn't do that. In fact, Cam kind of went the other way. But the one thing he always could do is play. And so you get to be that way, and you don't have to follow the rules. And so I was talking about the Alabama kid earlier, and then Dan at the end of the hour brought up Cam Newton. And it's, to me, you got a week left in the month of March, and the two biggest stories we're talking about on a Wednesday very well could be taking place, one at Auburn, one at Alabama. And what he brought up was Cam put out a video where he didn't just say, hey, I'm at the pro day, going to see if I can throw. He sort of took a shot. No, he didn't even sort of take a shot. I'm trying to get a number. He said, 32 out of these randoms keep getting jobs. That video, and I mentioned this yesterday, I thought that he was talking about just getting on a roster. I texted a guy who's playing the NFL. I was like, hey, when do you max out your pension? And he said, it's 10 seasons. He said, you're fully vested after it's four seasons, which is four games equals a season, so it's 3 years and four games. And he updated that. I'd known that for a while, but I hadn't, hadn't talked about it with anybody. And so yesterday he updated that as well. But I said, I'm trying to figure out why Cam's coming back. Now, this is before I'd seen the headline and I was going to go watch the video, but I was reading about it and hadn't watched the video yet. And as the video's starting, it's a 54-second video. And the first part of the video, I don't know how these randoms keep getting jobs. I was like, oh, yeah, randoms on NFL rosters. That absolutely happens. There are some randoms who are backup quarterbacks or third quarterbacks, and they're under contract, but they're on the practice squad. But there's also a lot of, as he calls them, randoms who are on active NFL rosters. They're the backup. Go look at some of the guys who were populating the backup quarterback spot at the end of last season. He calls them randoms. That's a little disrespectful, but in the realm of what Cam Newton has been, I get it. Then like 40 seconds later, you get to the very end of the video and he's like, by the way, there's 32 players. No way. And I was like, whoa, he's talking about starting again. I thought he was just wanting to get on a roster. He is not interested in that. So it was a really slightly confusing video because it wasn't just him. He had like 40 seconds of video, but it was as much receiver as quarterback. And there was one throw, I think, that you got to see the entire arc of it and everything from arm to, but it was at such an angle, you couldn't really tell anything. And most of us wouldn't be able to tell anything anyway. I wouldn't. I was like, oh, he completed it and it was straight. I'm trying to not overestimate what we know about this, but Cam does know about it. And there's a reason that there was a lot of a scarcity or there was a lot more attention beforehand than after from Cam. So it's what it is, and he can find himself a beach or a mountaintop or somewhere in between if he would like to have, and got to do a thing the rest of his day except go to the mailbox. If he wants to find that place, he can. He is intent on, but not just getting on a roster like I was thinking. He is intent on getting back into the NFL as a starter. It's not an old man's game in most cases, especially when your game was built on being physical and in part fast, etc. So that's on Cam. I do want to mention one before we break here. One change, and this is basketball. It's just about March Madness, that's all. One change to March Madness that I think would improve the experience of almost everyone participating in or even consuming the tournament, and I mean in any way. Basketball in a dome stinks. Or a stadium, or anything bigger than about 18,000 seats. I have been to big-time basketball games in domes and stadiums, like two good teams playing for real stakes. Now, there is no real accomplishment in that because the Final Four is next weekend in Houston, and it's at the football stadium again. When Villanova won in 2016, Dan, that was at the same place, right?
It was, yeah.
Reliant Stadium or Energy?
Yes, it was. NRG Stadium now, I think at the time, Reliant.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So the exact same setup and building and everything. So I went back and looked, and that's when Villanova and Jay Wright, they won their title. Folks, there were 74,000 people at the final. So when I say I've been to big-time basketball games in domes and stadiums, literally so has anyone else who had $26. Because for $26, it could have been 74. They would have sold you a ticket in Houston 7 years ago. 74,000. Oh, and one. Look, here's Chuck. Chuck, do you have $26? Actually, I got 52. Me and my friend Dan, two, please. All right, official attendance, 74,002. They would have kept selling. So, yes, I have been to these big basketball games because I had a debit card. I was able to go to a game. It wasn't about access or knowing anybody. It was about it's at the Georgia Dome or it's at the Alamo Dome or it's at the Super Dome. And so I walked up, hi, one please. And, well, the game starts in 20 minutes. Oh, I know. I didn't get my tickets early, but I'm here now. All right, we have 12,000 in this section. So you just go in. So I'm speaking from experience when I say this. The players will almost always tell you they don't perform as well because of the sight lines. That's what the players would tell you. When a basketball game is played in a venue like it will be in Houston and like it was 7 years ago that will fit 74,000 people, here's the truth. Almost all of those 74,000 people can't really see the game in any way that you are supposed to see a game. They can't. Again, I've been part of it. Michael Jordan in a building with like 48,000 people. I was like, oh, Jordan's in town? Hi, I'd like to go do that. Can I get a ticket? Well, of course you can. We're playing it in a stadium. Oh, a regular season NBA game? Yes, we are. Why? Well, Michael Jordan. Oh, okay. So here's my whatever it was, and you get to go in a stadium, and like I was kind of behind the curtain a little bit, but they let me in. So when that's what the Final Four is going to be next weekend. Almost all the people on site, probably about 60,000 of them, 55,000 of them, they're not watching the game in the way you're – I think they would have a better viewing experience. Now, they have the experience. I was at the game. I was at the final. Sure, yeah, absolutely true. While legally accurate, it may have been misleading. You will see and have a better viewing experience at home versus being part of 74,000. And there's a bunch of et ceteras. It's bad for the players, bad for the coaches. Coaches don't like it. The fans, you can legally check a box. Yes, I was there. That's about it. There's a bunch of et ceteras, but money means it will continue to be in caverns. Right now, top of mind, can anybody, last time, the last time that the NCAA Final Four was played in something other than a stadium or a dome, the Hive in Charlotte, 1994. And it ain't ever going back there. It will only be in places that they'll sell 74,000 tickets again. Because when you can sell, like, we have temporary seating to take the capacity from 15,000 to 16,200. I'm like, all right, well, that's not bad. That's the temporary seating in a bag. No, 74,000. When you're not increasing attendance by 1,200, you're increasing attendance by, like, 60,000. That's a lot of money. And so that's why it's not going to change, but the product for everybody involved is just not as good, and we're still having a blast with it. It could be so much better if it's actually played in a place where you play basketball. We break. Continue on Wednesday next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show. This Wednesday, appreciate everybody coming here for your college football conversation. There's a lot of stuff that has been true recently about Michigan football that was not going to be true in 2023. Man, they've got two quarterbacks. They've got a quarterback battle. They've got the no, they really don't. And they've got this stud running back, and well, this is his final season. He's going to the NFL. No, that's not true either. There's a little bit of surprise with how it has eventually unfolded as Michigan tilts towards 2023, but on balance, it's all worked out because they had somebody put a hammer lock on quarterback last year, and then Blake Corum, honestly, I'm surprised he's not, like, we're reading about combine results from him. I thought that was going to be his outcome. He's like, nah, come play for free for another year. Want to welcome on right now, talk about this and a bunch of other stuff when it comes to the Maize and Blue from the Michigan Rival site. It is Trevor McHugh. How are you today, brother?
Doing well. Good to hear you, Chuck, man.
I was kind of used to, hey, is anybody going to, you know, lay claim to the quarterback job? Was it a surprise that this is, you know, J.J. McCarthy did what he did last year, or was it never really supposed to come to that? Like, it should have happened sooner.
Yeah, really, last year J.J. was dealing with a shoulder injury that limited him through spring and summer, so the quarterback battle was essentially put on hold through fall camp. In fact, Cade McNamara was carrying himself, as he should have, very much as the starting quarterback at Michigan. And then by fall, J.J., even despite, you know, months and months of not throwing, was really, really impressive. And then, of course, Harbaugh being Harbaugh, with his weird final battle where Cade started the first game and then J.J. started the second. And by then, we knew McCarthy was going to be everything we thought he was going to be. And he took over the team, and it's very, very much his team now. You can tell he's the leader of this football team in this offseason heading into 2023.
Blake Corum, particularly at that – like, anybody who has a chance to go get paid, I'm like, go get paid. But Blake Corum was a guy that at that position, we say especially at running backs, because only so much tread on the time, we all know what it is. And he got hurt. What all figures into this, him coming back? Because he still might have been the first running back gone. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. So Blake is just one of many. About seven guys with NFL draft potential chose to return to Michigan this offseason. So each of them are going to have different reasons. As far as, you know, paying for free, this is a situation where Michigan's NIL strategy has paid off. They're not in the pay-for-play game with the high school recruits, but they are taking care of their players that are here. And there was a push for NIL for the one more year campaign is what it was called, where a bunch of funding came together and a lot of these guys did get NIL deals to return to Michigan. Now, a lot of them will tell you that wasn't a big part of it. The consistent theme we're hearing, though, is the term unfinished business, right? Michigan's proven a lot in the last 2 years. They've beaten Ohio State twice. They've won the Big Ten twice. They've gotten to the college football playoff twice. But then what have they really done since then, right? A blowout against Georgia, which I'd argue that's one of the best college football teams I've ever seen. But you lose as favorites to TCU. And now these guys, you know, they're not going to say natty or bust out loud, but that's the expectation. They're all back because they won a national championship.
Talk up front. We don't like there aren't stats you could put on offensive linemen most times, so we don't, you know, really understand or follow it the same way. We just don't. Jim Harbaugh went and found himself a award winner in the transfer portal last year on the offensive line. Can that be Drake Nugent this year? Kid coming in from Smarty Pants Stanford.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of folks think he can be. You know, when he first was added, that was my thought. Well, this is a good addition, but this isn't the Olu level addition. But that's the talk right now. And if you believe Pro Football Focus and some of these analytical guys, they think Drake is right on par with Olu. But he's going to have competition. He's been limited in spring camp so far. And a gentleman who's been with the Michigan program for 2 years has taken advantage. His name is Greg Crippen. So none of these transfers that came in, Miles Hinton, another Stanford transfer, and then Ladarius Henderson from Arizona State, who's going to join in the summer. None of those guys were promised jobs, and this is a very, very deep offensive line group. We're talking like 16 guys that could start. So Nugent absolutely could be the next Olu. He's got the potential, but he's going to have to beat out Greg Crippen first.
All right. So anybody who watched NFL football last year saw Adrian Hutchinson showed up for like day one. He's like, all right, I can do this. And Ajabo, like in 21 as well, just monsters for Michigan. They lost both of them, and overall, the defense, like, they figured it out last year. In fact, they kind of were better by some metrics. They didn't have, like, the superstar like guy like that, but they figured it out. What's it going to be? Pass rush. Nothing else. Pass rush in 2023.
Absolutely. They've got a couple guys coming back in Braden McGregor, who has been getting Aiden Hutchinson comparisons since he arrived in Ann Arbor. He had a pretty serious knee injury his senior year of high school. It's really delayed his progression, but they think he's a full go heading into the season this year. Derek Moore was a standout freshman last year. I think he's going to make a big sophomore jump as well. And then the guy to watch is another transfer. Talk about Michigan and transfer portal, kind of a new game for us. But Josiah Stewart, coming over from Coastal Carolina, he had 13.5 sacks as a freshman, fourth in the nation his freshman year. He's coming over now. He's a perfect fit for this defense. He might be that pin the ears back, go get the quarterback every time kind of guy that they didn't have last year.
All right, last thing for you, and this is just an opinion thing, and it's kind of, you know, you put this stuff out in February and March and April because we don't have real games, and so we all read it, and it's fun. I saw a list where Jim Harbaugh sits atop, I think it was maybe on three, maybe, Jim Harbaugh sits atop the list of the Big Ten coaching rankings. And when I saw that and then saw the article, I was like, somebody needs to tell Michigan fans this. Has that changed over the last 2 years? Or is, like, would that surprise Michigan fans? Would there be pushback? Because I think he's done a fabulous job. He used to be done everything but beat Ohio State. Now he's beating Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, they love you when you're winning, right? So, look, we've come a long way from that 2020 season when, whether they admit it or not, the vast majority of Michigan fans were ready to move on from Jim Harbaugh. So, props to him. He reinvested in this program and overnight. So, at this point, yeah, you're beating Ohio State. You're winning Big Ten championships. The love for Jim Harbaugh is pretty massive here in Ann Arbor.
Fantastic stuff. All right, Trevor, appreciate you, brother. Thank you, man.
You too, Chuck. Thanks.
Trevor McHugh, Maize and Blue. Literally, it was Amazing Blue Review. The Michigan Rivals site, and just a really, really good resource for Michigan information there. But yeah, Michigan last year beat Ohio State, and remember that it had been he does everything but beat Ohio State. Now it's he does everything except he hadn't won a national championship or hadn't won a playoff game yet. He'll win a playoff game and get a national championship, and boy, because beginning next year, winning a playoff game, way more doable. So he'll win a playoff game. Like, this is the final season that you can get full street cred for it, because it's about to be like making the NCAA basketball tournament. That it was just, I don't know, 24 or 48 or 54 or 64, and then they now it's 68. They've expanded it with a rotating number of buys, just on and on and on and on. And so it used to be, well, we made the dance, and now it's, why aren't you making the dance? Not quite to that extent, but making the playoffs, it used to be a real divider. And I mean as recently as, well, let's say 9 months from now, it'll be a divider. Not going to be a divider as much anymore. Oh, you made the playoffs? Well, which Group of Five conference did you win? Among other questions. So that's just where it's
the winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
That's now.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Here's what a spring game is about. It's for the fans. That's it. It's for the former Heisman winner to be there, and you throw the freshman a couple of bubbles and let him take it the distance, and then the special fan gets to score a touchdown or, like, throw a pass to, like, the 60-year-old person. That's the spring game. Spring practice is for us to obsess about things like what a kid is listed about. Because I got a text about this. I don't know, back in the day, maybe when I had my pager, maybe it had 911 attached to it. But we obsess about, like, depth at tight end, things like that. But positions that kids are playing in spring. Can I tell you why certain kids play positions in spring? Because other kids are out. And it's just spring. And maybe a coach looks at a player and goes, well, maybe. Jalen Hurd at Tennessee, do y'all remember him? He was 6'4", I think, at the combine, 6'4 and three quarters. Tall. That's too tall to be a running back. You can't run behind your pads. Cameron Seldon is apparently going to be a running back. He was listed as an athlete, thought to be a wide receiver. I don't know, in spring, is he playing running back? These are the kind of things that you get text messages about. And I said, well, let's get Adam Sparks on, and I will ask him, because this is really – and I'm not trying to be funny here. This is really important to people, but it kind of is. I want to welcome on right now. Guy does a great job covering Tennessee for Knoxville News Sentinel. It's my good friend Adam Sparks. Adam, how are you on this Wednesday?
Good. Good to be back home. We're – I don't know how it is there, but it's spring now, but only in only on the calendar, not outside.
No, absolutely. Bundle up, brother. So Cameron Seldon, I keep getting this little ping. Now there's a group text with like three Tennessee fans and me, and I have yet to participate. What is Cameron Seldon going to be? And I keep thinking, well, unless he's a really, really, really special freshman, he's not going to be a whole lot because it's the SEC and it's Tennessee. But what is Cameron Seldon going to line up with? What is his spot on the – because he's a 6'1", 210, good-looking freshman, but what's he going to be?
He is a running back right now, and emphasis on right now. The roster was released on Monday morning, and it listed him as a wide receiver. And then practice started at about 8 a.m., went through practice. He was still a wide receiver, as far as the roster said, that was handed out to us, that was released that morning. And then Josh Heupel came in and said, actually, he's a running back, and 30 minutes later, the roster online was changed to show Cam Seldon as a running back. So it was up in the air a little bit. He may end up being either. They've got reasonable experience, despite losing a couple starters. They've got reasonable experience at wide receiver. If he was going to play wide out, it'd be in the slot, and two of their best receivers right now are in the slot. So they're going to have him at running back for a while, and I've seen him in practice. He's learning it steadily. But Jabari Small, their starter at running back, is out for probably all of spring, recovering from an off-season surgery. So there's reps to be had there. So they're going to put Seldon there for at least through spring.
Yeah, and I knew they do have a true, like a freshman, like an actual running back, Biggin, as a matter of fact, but he's not there till summer, no carries, whatever. When you said this is funny to me, when you mentioned the slot, there's been some conversation about Dante Thornton, I believe, is that how you pronounce the young man's first name? Dante Thornton, from the wide receiver from Oregon. I want to ask you, is he in consideration for slot? Because slot used to be the 5'10 guy who needed a little help getting off the line of scrimmage. Dante Thornton looks like he walked out of the ocean and scaring people. Like, he's 6'4 and a half, about 190. He is this big, giant dude.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny. At slot right now, they've got Squirrel White, who's the presumed starter, coming back. A diminutive, very, very fast guy. And then they've got Dante Thornton, the Oregon transfer, who's a big, long receiver at slot. And he's sort of mirroring. It's funny to see them at practice, is that Thornton is mirroring Squirrel White, his every movement, in plays, out of plays, drills, everything. They're a pair. I thought it was interesting that they put Thornton at slot because Brew McCoy, who's a returning starter on the outside, is out for spring, off-season surgery. So you would think, well, that's an open position there. Thornton could get a lot of reps from the outside, but instead they put him in the slot. I think this is toying with the idea of using Thornton in two different places, him being sort of a swing guy, because Squirrel White would be in the slot, Brew McCoy would be on the outside. Ramel Keaton, who started half of last season, can be on the outside. Thornton is a versatile guy. He can play either spot, but I think it's sort of opened their mind up a little bit about what these, you know, long rangy sprinter types can be in slot, like you mentioned, sort of the opposite of what slot used to be. And that's because of Jalin Hyatt. Jalin Hyatt had the body type of a guy on the outside.
Yeah.
But he was in the slot and he was a vertical threat. And I think it's sort of opened their mind up to using different body types at that position. And so I think they're experimenting a little bit. The only drawback there is Josh Heupel does not sub wide receivers. So you have a starting three, and that's your three usually for the whole game. You go to a fourth or fifth guy when there's injury. So does that mean Thornton is an odd man out, or they're going to change their substitution process? We'll have to see in the fall.
A totally different role for what that slot guy is. You mentioned Ramel Keaton. Now, he's a guy that – and every program has this. You don't have to work in the media or even cover a team. If you're a fan of a team and you watch them every Saturday, kid has a giant game. It happens to be on TV. Everybody around America thinks, oh, my gosh. Was that a little bit of Ramel Keaton? Because I can't find Tennessee fans get nearly as excited as I do about Ramel Keaton and what's possible in 23.
Yeah, I mean, Ramel Keaton is sort of the, he's fine, but you'd rather find somebody better. I think that's sort of the take of Tennessee fans. He's okay, but I bet they can find better. It's just not sort of a sexy pick for your starting wide receiver, but he produced last year. 2 years ago, he filled in for a couple of games. He produced. Last year, he ended up being the starter for half the season when Cedric Tillman went down. And he produced a lot, had a couple of big games, had a few deep balls that he caught, Alabama game, he caught a deep ball.
Florida
caught a deep ball, that really put the game out of reach in the Orange Bowl.
I mean,
2 years ago, they had a guy named Javonte Payton, who was a Mississippi State transfer, and he was also the number three receiver, and you didn't hear much from him, but every game he'd have about two plays where it'd say, well, that's a good guy to have a number three. So they know Ramel Keaton, they know what he is, and he can be their number three wide receiver and therefore a starter, but they're toying with the idea of Thornton and where to use him. What we've seen the last 2 years, even though they start three guys and they just go with three guys, a fourth guy is always needed. A fourth guy has been needed both years because of injuries. And so Keaton and Thornton both will end up playing major roles. It just may not be at the same time.
All right, last thing I'll ask you about, and I mean, it's spring, and that's when you look at the upperclassmen and go, are you hurt at all? All right, you sit out. I really don't like playing freshman corners in the SEC unless you're special. Are any of the kids running around right now only because it's spring? Are any of the kids the true freshman corners? Did they look – you can kind of look at a kid and know it might be in there. Like everybody saw Eric Berry and was like, all right, he's a star. Any of these kids look like they could be special?
Jordan Matthews, Ricky Gibson. Both of those guys are four-star corners. Most interested in Jordan Matthews, really smart kid. He's out of Baton Rouge, but – somehow slipped through the fingers of LSU. He chose Tennessee over Michigan and Texas. Looks the part, pretty good size corner. They need guys that can play press man. Tennessee has struggled mightily the last 2 years with that. They've got guys that can play zone adequately, but not man. It's the big question right now with Tennessee's secondary is that they get everybody back at corner, and they know where to be. They know the scheme. They know the assignments. They're not going to blow coverages, but within those coverages, they haven't been great. So do you roll the dice and say, hey, we'll go with a younger guy? He may be out of position sometimes, but he could be a better coverage guy, just better executing the coverage.
Yeah.
Or do you go with the guys you trust? Do you know they're going to be where they're supposed to be? And I tend to think Tennessee is going to go with the veteran guys and just hope they steadily improve. But a guy like Matthews is showing them something in spring, and so maybe he's a guy that will at least get a chance in those early games and non-conference games and show them something.
Yeah, and it's going to come down to pass rush. I mean, you just can't do that. It keeps going back to that, especially with, freshmen out there. Let's make it easy on you. We'll play man. No, let's not do that. Adam, appreciate you as always, brother. It's always good to talk to you, man.
Yep, you too. We'll see.
All right. Adam Sparks, Knoxville News Sentinel. I remember that was the turn, I believe, as a matter of fact. By the way, it's a sound. Approach when you are recruiting at the level Tennessee was recruiting at through about 2004. And I'm going to try to remember who these kids were. There's always, and you don't know it in the moment, but you can look back, and when you see now the, you know, the either bell curve or EKG from season to season or over across decades that a program has, we can look back now with knowledge. And I believe the 04 season, I believe that was the turn for Tennessee football. And it actually, it was the beginning of the issues. It may be, I don't know this yet, it may be the end of the exception era. It may be the end of when Tennessee football, for an exception in their history, was a consistently really good to great program. And they were for about 15 years or so. They're really good to occasionally great for about 15 years. And so if that's what you got used to for a decade and a half, and then they weren't for a year, and then for 2 years, and then it was 5 or 6 years, and then it was 10 years, and you're like, what in the world? Nobody can get it right. What's the chance they just happened to get it right for those 15 years, and the normal is the other? When it goes that long, you start to wonder, like, all right, now we have perspective. Let's make use of it. I think the 2004 season, that was John Chavis. Man, he loved him some man coverage. And he loved to play games up front and get aggressive. And Chief could do it. And that year he had two freshman corners. And I want to say it was it Rashawn Fellows? And who was the other kid? And they were hanging on for dear life. Jonathan Hefney, was he the other corner? And it was trial by fire. You're like, all right, well, they're going to be a lot better. And Tennessee made it to the SEC championship that year. Now, they weren't going to beat Auburn that night. Auburn's just way, way, way too good. And Gerald Riggs Jr. busted one long. And so they, you know, they made some plays, actually, which, you know, kept them in the game, sort of. But Auburn wasn't going to lose that night. And you think, well, if this was the fall-off season, was winning the SEC East, and we had two freshman corners, and we're still able to do what we wanted up front. That wasn't the case, though. That was actually sort of the beginning. No, I would say the beginning of the end. No, it was the end of the beginning. it was the end of the good days. And then after that, it all changed. And it's funny that we're talking about starting some corners here, because whenever I think about Tennessee and freshman corners, I'm like, my gosh, that's the mark in time. That you just had no idea at the moment that's what was going on, but it had already started that Tennessee was not bringing in the same level of recruit year after year. And then suddenly look up and you got Joey Matthews and Brent Schaefer playing quarterback. And you're like, all right, how did this happen? So we're going to break. We got Dan Matthews back in studio. We're going to come back, wrap up on this Wednesday next.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
We've got 8 healthy linemen out there, so we're actually in a different position than we were last year, and that we have to be a lot more careful in terms of what we're doing. We've got some help on the way, which will help us during the season. But I think each year, what we're looking for is physically stronger, faster, bigger, faster, stronger as a team, and we are.
We're not there yet. Brian Kelly, the LSU head coach, and we had Hunt Palmer on in hour one. Chuck Oliver Show wrapping up on a Wednesday. Tyler McComas joined us from, he's on in Tulsa, OKC, out there in Oklahoma. He covers OU mostly, but it's all sports, you know that. But he's one of our OU specialists. So we talked with Tyler in first hour. Also Hunt Palmer from 104.5, Baton Rouge, and pregame, postgame, all that, with LSU football. And one of the things we talked about was I talked about the running backs and how Armani Goodwin, he's out for the whole spring and maybe even summer, all of summer maybe. And so we were talking about injuries. And then Hunt said, well, actually spring game, because I'd asked about spring game being the same day as like a weekend series across the street. He's like, I don't know if let me check back on that spring game. So they ain't got a lineman right now. So that's what says. Don't have enough linemen. They have 6 offensive linemen that are healthy enough to run around and, you know, you can scrimmage with. And so Hunt mentioned that. And so I don't know if they're going to have a spring game or not, or a limited. You can't do anything with 6 linemen. Can't do anything. You can't do anything with 6 linemen. Not even with the first team. You don't want to. I don't. So you can have individual unit drills, but you can't run any team stuff or whatever. Trevor McHugh was here talking about University of Michigan and what is on tap for them. And it's really a couple of unexpected headlines, because like at the beginning of September last year, you're like, well, this guy's not the quarterback anymore. And well, that running back is so great, he'll be in the NFL. And now both those things didn't happen. And Michigan could be right back in the mix for playoffs in the final year, where it really is a big deal making the playoffs. Then we talked with Adam Sparks from Knoxville News Sentinel. And I'm just really bullish on Tennessee, in part because of the attitude from Josh Heupel. And I don't mean, you know, chest out, aggressive, confrontational. I'm saying, I guess, attitude, like the understanding of what the game is today. Understanding that this is about acquiring a whole lot of talent, and from year to year, and if it's stomping out roster fires, and what, not considering the big picture. Not, you're like, I'm not saying that you're like that Wagner group you're recruiting from the prisons. I'm saying that there are long-term ramifications for everything. Like, in some of it, like when freshmen were, you're not eligible anymore, and that was true until like 1972 or 3 or sometime, there were ramifications from that. Well, you couldn't really worry about the ramifications. You just had to kind of put your team together now without freshmen. Well, the portal, yeah, there's some long-term ramifications for that. No chance that we've already got it all figured out and we know exactly the effect on the game. No, that's going to unfold over a couple of decades, and you still won't know. And so, Josh Heupel, it appears to me he's not really giving that as much consideration and deep dive thought. It's still, okay, well, whatever's going to happen, big picture's big picture. I'm going to go scoop up some talent. Good for him. So, that's what they're trying to do. That's what trying to get done. And I just couldn't be more impressed. I'm counteracting it with what I started the show with, Billy Napier. It just looks like a totally different approach. And I'm talking like, folks, very high level just mindsets here. Get a bunch of guys right now, best you can. And maybe that was Tennessee. Maybe that was Billy Napier as well. And he just didn't execute it as well. But then that's a different issue. But it looks to me that that wasn't the approach, because Graham Mertz was actually a target. And Graham Mertz is not like Joe Milton. That's a lot of blue sky. Could be a bunch of turnovers as well. And inaccurate, and he was scattershot against Bowling Green to start the season 2 years ago. But that could be the case. Well, but there's also the Joe Milton you look at and go, what if he throws 34 touchdowns? Because he could do that. There's not that wild range of scenarios with Graham Mertz. It's just not. So that's what that is. Dan, how's your Wednesday progressing, man?
Oh, a little bit interesting of a view yesterday at Georgia's practice. And it was one who tipped us off with just a straight-up report, and then another who had photographic evidence. The one was Roddy Nabolsi, who had alerted the public on social media. One, Jeff Collins, former Georgia Tech head coach, was out at Georgia spring practice. Seth Emerson, our good buddy over there at The Athletic, had photographic evidence, which I did not even look at the responses to it, because I can only imagine what the responses were twofold. Number one, Georgia Tech, what an idiot. What's he doing out there? Keep him away from a football field. Kind of a similar one from Georgia fans as well that I could imagine. No way. Keep him away from my program. All of those different types of things. We have a guy on our show every single Tuesday in Dave Bartu who tells us what a good coach that Jeff Collins is. As a defensive coordinator, what is Kirby Smart in the business of doing? Giving his program every single advantage they can to be able to win football games. So doesn't that usually mean that you want smart people to be involved in the operation, even in the off-field method? Now, I'm not saying that that's why Jeff Collins was out there at practice. It could have been just as simple as, I believe he lives on Lake Oconee, and it's such a tight-knit community in the coaching world that it's such a small world that he probably just picked up the phone, hey, you mind if I come out to practice? Or even a buddy of his that might be part of the staff in some capacity says, hey, why don't you come on out to practice? You know, it'd be good to see you. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to transition to him going up to Kirby's office, a handshake deal. Hey, you're going to be an analyst for us now. Hey, it could even be a week or two during the season, kind of like what we saw in 2016 with Brian Van Gorder. What are you seeing from here, Coach? Can you tell us what you see on film here, just in a consultant role? Or it could have also been just as much of, hey, while being husband and father of the year is a lot of fun and I love doing that, that's my number one priority, it's also fun to be able to do the other thing that used to be a huge priority for me, and it's also in coaching. If indeed he is ever added as an analyst, it's not going to be the thing that sinks the ship that is the Georgia football program right now. Again, this is a man who was highly revered as being a very good defensive coordinator. Might we even say, Chuck, that we're seeing coaching rehabilitation program 2.0 starting to rear its head in Athens, which you know what's going to be next, right, from Alabama fans? Hey, wait a minute. That's our thing. We did that first. You guys are copying us.
Well, I hope they are. Because when Bama was doing it and really first started stretching out the support staff to include more than just a GA who wanted to stay on instead of starting a caravan career, when it went from that to, like, former head coaches, Alabama was the leader in that, and guess who was there? It was Kirby. So if he is doing it himself now, bully for him. He should. Best instruction, best coaches. You can actually do more coaching now that that's you. Yeah, absolutely. Dan, great job today. David, thank y'all. Everybody listening, appreciate we all got together for a couple hours to talk to college football, and it was a lot of fun. We're going to take a 22-hour break. We'll recharge those batteries. Be back this time tomorrow with more college football conversation, and it'll be right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.